Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Our host today, myself, Paul Wearson.
And me, Dennis Hart. Good to be with you again today, Paul.
Oh, it's going to be fun because we're beginning an interview with Matt Patton, from the superintendent from Roland Story Schools, about all the improvements made in that school district this summer. Then you have a great interview with a guy who was involved with the filming of Madison County down in Winterset.
At least his pickup truck was involved in the filming of that movie.
That's going to be fantastic. I don't know how you run across these people. And then we have Maggie Westfold with Points to Ponder. And first, the news by Dennis.
Paul, as you know, normally we begin this broadcast with a look at news from the pages of newspapers around Ames. And we will get to that in a moment. But first, we have to start with a story that made news not just here in Iowa, but around the nation, the heartbreaking discovery of a female body. It is believed to be that of Molly Tibbetts, the 20-year-old University of Iowa student who had gone missing a month ago after she was seen jogging in the community of Brooklyn. A first-degree murder charge has been filed against 24-year-old Christian Bahena Rivera. He is an undocumented immigrant who has lived in the Poweshiek County area for several years. Rivera told authorities he saw Tibbetts running last month, approached her, and ran alongside or behind her. She warned him to leave her alone, pulled out her phone, and said she was calling the police. Rivera told authorities he chased her down, said he blacked out, but remembers pulling Tibbetts out of the trunk of his vehicle, taking her to a cornfield, and covering her with corn stalks. Of course, there's going to be much more to come in this heartbreaking story in the next few days and weeks, and we will be following all of it. Now let's take a look at what's making news in the Boone News Republican this week, which reports that an Ames man was sentenced to 20 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to theft and to eluding police. 35-year-old Bradley Eugene Allen was sentenced in Boone County District Court. The incident took place last April when a Boone County sheriff's deputy saw a vehicle with no license plates on it. The driver refused to stop, and a high-speed chase began that eventually ended near Nevada. Authorities found out the vehicle had been stolen from a truck stop in Altoona. Also in the News Republican, word that work has started on repainting the biggest water tower in Boone. It's a job being done by hand, and it will take 3 months to finish. The $458,000 project will give a fresh coat of white and red paint to the 150-foot-tall tower at 1st and Clinton Streets. That tower holds 750,000 gallons of water. The News Republican also has word that the city of Boone has hired a firm to conduct a survey of Boone residential properties next month. That survey is going to ask for general information about the income of households within the city. The reason for the survey? The city wants to apply for grant money to improve its wastewater treatment system, and that funding requires that most of the city residents who will benefit from those improvements have to be of low to moderate income. In the Nevada Journal, word that a Nevada man is being accused of a break-in and several thefts at laundromats in Nevada, Story City, and Ames. 32-year-old Ryan Dale Dunn faces several counts of theft and one count of burglary. Also in the Journal, a story about 16-year-old Malia Smith of Colo, who spent her summer painting favorite book characters and other colorful pieces just outside the Colo library doors. Among those characters, the Cat in the Hat, the Very Hungry Caterpillar, and Curious George. And she's not done yet. She plans to paint several other popular characters, including Charlie Brown and the Crocodile from Peter Pan, before cold weather sets in. Malia is just starting her junior year at Colonesco. The Journal also has a story about the upcoming Lincoln Highway Days, which is a very big event indeed, and which takes place this week from Thursday through Sunday in Nevada. There will be a parade, antique cars, a hog roast, a pie-in-the-face fundraiser, a craft show, food booths, a rodeo, plenty of other entertainment as well. Also, the Nevada History Center is going to be offering historical Lincoln Highway Days memorabilia, as well as many other things. And the Journal reports on a recent fundraising breakfast in Nevada to help get a Boys and Girls Club five-day-a-week site started in that community. That breakfast raised $8,000. In the Story City Herald, word that the National Weather Service says those three tornadoes that touched down in Story County on July 19th have now been rated as EF-0s. That's the weakest on the scale used to measure a tornado's intensity. Tornadoes that are EF-0s produce wind speeds of 65 to 85 miles an hour. The three that hit Story County landed near Story City, Roland, and Collins. All three stayed in rural agricultural areas, and no building damage was reported. That same day, much stronger tornadoes hit Bondurant, Pella, and Marshalltown, causing major damage in each location. The Herald also has word that major construction in the Roland Story School District is almost finished, just in time for the first day of school, which is next Monday, August 27th. Lots of projects are involved, including additional and renovated classrooms, remodeled offices, additional security, and more. An open house is going to be held at the elementary school this coming Saturday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. so everyone can see what the new look looks like. In just a few minutes on this broadcast, we're going to talk live with Roland Story Superintendent Matt Patton about all of these changes. Also in the Herald, word that the Story City Historical Society is raising money to replace the roof on one of the community's most beloved buildings, the Bartlett House Museum. That building was constructed back in 1903. Also in the Herald, word that a rock and roll music festival is going to take place again this year between Roland and McCallsburg. It's called Rockstock. It's going to be on Saturday, September 22nd. Six or seven bands have already committed to playing. This will be the third year for this music extravaganza. In the Tri-County Times, a preview of the upcoming Prairie Fest in Huxley, which has something for everyone. It starts this Friday night with food, balloons, and a petting zoo. Saturday morning, the annual parade starts at 10. There will also be a 5K, 10K race, food eating contest, sand volleyball, music and comedy acts. You get the idea. A lot of things going on in Huxley, and it's all this weekend. And, Paul, that is our brief summary of the week's news from the pages of the Boone News Republican, the Nevada Journal, the Story City Herald, and the Tri-County Times. Of course, they'll all have much more news when their print editions come out this week, and a reminder that I'll be back here on Friday with news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. So, Paul, the story that we've all been following for the past month has a tragic ending, and it is, our hearts, of course, go out to the Tibbetts family and the entire community of Brooklyn.
Yeah, this is the kind of tragedy that happens all over, and without expectation of that happening in a small town, you feel safe in a town the size of Brooklyn. And everyone needs to be in touch with the fact that this crime stands alone by itself and really doesn't indicate anything about any group of people or anything beyond the facts in the case. So we have to keep in mind that this crime is committed by an individual, and justice will be done, and then the healing begins too.
Yeah, there are many, many good people out there, as you know, who rally in times of crisis. We've seen that in Ames and in Iowa many, many times. Good things are happening all over this state, including a very good thing going on right now in Story City that you're going to be talking about. It's a wonderful thing that's happened up there this past summer, and it means good things on the way for Story City.
Yes, and how timely, because we should have Matt Patton on the line right now. Matt, are you there?
I'm here, Paul.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and I just think it's wonderful when I drive by the project up there, because I live in Story City, of course. And I hope that's going to be done. It looks like it's right down to the wire, Matt. How's that project coming up there at the elementary school?
Well, Paul, it's progressing very nicely. One of the things that we did when we established our calendar for this school year is we gave ourselves a couple extra days to complete the construction projects that were going on around the district. So most schools are starting the 23rd tomorrow, and we bumped our start date back to the 27th just to give us a little bit more time to complete those projects. And you're correct. As you drive by, we're going to need those additional days, and we'll be ready to go next Monday for school.
You know, it's always interesting when you're a layperson and you don't understand the construction project, how you can panic when you drive by and it still looks like disarray and they'll never meet the deadline, but they will, right, Matt?
It will. The part that the public can't see when they drive by is what the inside of the building looks like. And I was in there just yesterday, and the teachers have been busy putting their classrooms back together. And the classroom spaces for the kids and for the teachers is in great shape. What is a little bit behind schedule, but I still think we'll hit the deadline of Monday, is the exterior on the west side of the building, and then the main office area, which is all brand new. So they're working diligently. I know last night they brought in lights so they could work in the evening well past dark and try and make sure they hit the deadline to get everybody in there on Monday.
Now, what was all involved there with the elementary school? What were the chief things that needed to be done to renovate for the future here? What sort of things specifically? I know they're really revamped the security and the entrance because everyone nowadays is so sensitive to security of the school and how you make entry into the building. So what was really entailed in all this in terms of actual building design?
Yeah, there were several things that were done to enhance safety and security of our students and staff. We've added security cameras around the interior and exterior of the building. We're putting in access controls so that everybody who comes into the building comes in with a scan card and an ID. And so that's how you get in and out of the building. During the school day, parents and community members will experience coming through the front door and then immediately being directed into the elementary office where they'll meet the secretary and sign in, and we can then give them access to the rest of the building. So safety and security was a big feature of this construction project. We also revamped the heating, air conditioning, ventilation system. Most of the building was equipped with a geothermal system. We think that that'll provide the best comfort for our students and staff in their classrooms, but also save the district money long-term on utility bills. So that was a big part of the project. The entire building got new ceiling tiles, new lights, LED lights, again, an energy cost savings from the standpoint of taxpayers paying utility bills. There was new technology put in classrooms, projectors, screens, those types of things, new fire alarms, lots of things. We reconfigured part of the building just to give more privacy in classrooms, to reduce noise that would travel between classrooms from time to time. We added a new music room and a new art room onto the building. New preschool playground got added as well. So it was a lot of stuff to cram into a short summer.
Well, it certainly is a forward-looking project. I particularly like the geothermal thing because, you know, as we progress, we're going to see more and more demands on energy and more costs involved in heating and cooling. And I know enough about that technology to really be sold on it. I'm so glad that you incorporated that into the new construction at the elementary school. Were there other things elsewhere in the school district that were accomplished this year that you were working on at the middle school and high school?
There were. We also had a high school science classroom renovation, so we revamped the two high school science classrooms with all new cabinetry, gas lines, you know, Bunsen burner lines and those types of things. There were new eyewashes put in. So, again, safety and security was our primary focus in that space. New windows, new desks, new chairs, those types of things. Increased the size of one of those classrooms as well. We also did a heating, air conditioning, ventilation project at both the middle school and the high school. Those two buildings did not get the geothermal package, but they did get several pieces of equipment, and they've got new controls so that as you go from building to building and room to room, it should be regulated at a much better level. We had several spaces in the district where the controls had failed, and so if you were in the high school auditorium for an event, for example, it would often be very, very hot in there. That has been addressed, and we'll be in there this morning with our teaching staff, and they'll appreciate the air conditioning. We also added air conditioning to the high school north gym, which was built about 10, 12 years ago without it, and so they've never had air conditioning in that facility, so that'll be regulated, and I'm sure that'll be appreciated by both our student-athletes, coaches, and also our fans. So those are big projects. We did a renovation in that same gym with some paint and that kind of stuff, but some minor technology things around the district and a middle school roof project to put a cherry on top.
Wow. Now, you say the air conditioning was installed in the new gym.
Correct.
And that is going to be great because I'm full confession here. I'm a Roland Story fan. I live in the Roland Story School District, and I go to graduation. And Matt Patton here, who our guest is, and all the school board members are sitting up front in suits and ties while everyone else is in shorts and T-shirts. And, of course, the graduates are in gowns, and it's very hot in there. And I always feel sorry for Matt. So,
thanks, Paul.
Isn't that going to be a lot better this year?
Oh, it's going to be a lot better. And then after graduation this past May, I think the heat index that day was 100+, and it was just miserable in there, to be quite honest with you. So we had to remind people one more time just how bad it can be before we installed the air conditioning.
Well, you hit the mark because I remember that day, and I actually cheated. I sat right by the door so I could duck out and breathe occasionally, and I thought, these parents who are at graduation are really suffering their last bad thing with their student to suffer through that graduation ceremony. And that's just going to be a vast improvement. It looks like you've cherry-picked all the things you really needed to do to respond to what the needs were in the school system. Yeah, this was a $9 million bond issue. Is that right, Matt?
That's correct. In 2017, we went to the voters and asked them to support these projects and several others that were completed earlier. And they voted in favor of that $9 million. And without their support and without their vote, these things wouldn't be getting done. And certainly, by your own testimony, these things were needed for our kids and our staff and for our public. And we're very appreciative of the populace for voting and supporting our school district and that bond vote.
Well, in talking with you, I'm sure we're talking also to every superintendent. You know, this Wednesday show here on Local Talk sort of highlights local areas around Ames, school districts, community theaters, and what's going on in those towns. And I'll bet that the other superintendents at these schools would be facing some of the same challenges that you have. And one thing that I've noticed in the Roland Scorey School District is that a lot of the elderly folks are very good about supporting these bond issues in an era where their children have long gone from being in school. And I'm sure that it's hard sometimes for older folks to say, I don't want to spend money on the schools. But that's not really a problem at Roland Scorey, is it, Matt?
No, and I think it's a general trend across the central part of the state and across Iowa as a whole. We tend to support our schools. We have a great tradition of that in this state. And even though a small percentage of the population has students in our classrooms at any given time, we see the value in educating our kids and giving them the opportunities to be successful, whether they stay in Iowa or do great things around the world.
Well, I think that we always say that one of our great exports from Iowa is our brains and our education and the kids who grow up here who, and I just talking with people in Story City and Roland, I'm sure that would be true in Nevada or the Ballard School District. You ask somebody, hey, where's Tommy? Where's Mary? Well, Tommy's in San Francisco and Mary's in Washington, D.C., you know, and we have to remember that our graduation rates are exceedingly high. What's the graduation rate at Roland Scorey?
Yeah, it obviously fluctuates from year to year, but we're pushing 98% typical average, which is about 8% higher than the state average. And as you probably know, Iowa has the highest graduation rate in the country.
Yes, and I think that a lot of the schools around here rate very highly in Iowa and in the nation. If you look at Gilbert or any of these neighboring school districts, they all have very high test score averages and achievement levels. And when I read the Story City Herald, you see articles of what of our students have done and where they've gone, all the students who make the dean's list at major universities. And you know that the educational preparation in these Iowa schools is excellent. And you know what I love about 2A and 1A schools, and that they all surround Ames, and so we're talking about the surrounding area. It's great because if you have the school musical and the football boys don't dance in the chorus, there won't be a school musical.
That's true.
And that translates into your son or daughter having access to a variety of things, not just what they're most interested in and what they're most focused on, but they learn things that are way outside the norm, like you can be on the football team and also sing the lead in the school show. And all kinds of opportunities are available because of numbers. If you have a 2A or 1A school, everyone has to participate in a variety of things. And that's in direct contrast to a large metro school where there's just so many kids that you have to focus on one extracurricular activity. Don't you find that to be true, Matt, that you see kids in all kinds of activities up there?
That's exactly right, Paul. In fact, we actually track some of that data, and right around 90% of our high school students are participating in some form of extracurricular activity or club. And so we think that, you know, it has benefits beyond just producing a better fall play or musical or jazz band. It also helps the kids to stay connected to school, and we know from statistical research that kids who are involved and connected in that way perform better in the classroom as well. So we're very proud of those numbers, and that's something that you can do in a smaller school district.
Matt, this is Dennis Hart. Let me ask you about, in this day and age, the need for what you've done this summer in terms of security in Story City. You've added security cameras, and I understand you've changed the entrance in the elementary school to make it a little safer. Talk about the need, unfortunately, for having to do that.
Yeah, it is a change probably in the last 20 or 30 years, going back to the Columbine situation that happened several years ago. From that moment forward, there have been lots of shootings at schools, and so there has been a ramping up of providing security features at our schools, something that, you know, our parents and grandparents would have never thought would be necessary, but it is clearly necessary today. And not only do we put those equipment pieces in place and change our entrances to make them, more safe. But we also do, you know, different types of drills to prepare for those unfortunate situations should they ever occur. And so, times have changed, and the most important thing we can do is keep students and staff safe. And so that has become a big priority for schools in recent years.
Well, I really think that that's tragic, and that's one of those things that just keynote some of the changes we've had as a society. But you have to be realistic, mm-hmm. and you have to be proactive. And certainly if you don't do those things and something happens, everyone will be lost in recrimination and anger. So safety is first.
Community members in Story City asking for these security changes, and how did they react when you said you were going to be doing them?
Yeah, that's a good question. We started that process with a campus safety committee in each building. And so the principals in each building got parents and staff members and even some students at the high school participated, and we just wanted to increase campus safety. And so they did audits and they did walkthroughs of our buildings, and they came up with a list of items that they felt would make each campus, each building safer. And so that came from a grassroots level. That was the parents asking for that. We surveyed parents at different times as well, and those types of things came to the top of the list. And so that's why we pursued those specific things. And there was a lot of conversation in those groups about maintaining a balance. Certainly we can be Fort Knox. Certainly we can put up barbed wire around our schools and look like a prison. But we also want to maintain a welcoming environment for kids and for parents and for community members. And so there's a balance there. What safety features can we put in place and still maintain that welcoming environment that we want at our schools? And so I think we've hit that balance. If you drive around our buildings or walk up to them, you won't notice most of the safety features. So it will still feel like a welcoming and inviting building, but there are several things in place that will help us in an emergency and keep kids safe and parents safe as well.
Well, you know, when you talk about these bond issues and money spent for school improvements, everyone asks the same question. How does that impact the tax base? How does that impact me as a taxpayer or supporter? And Matt, what's the profile for Roland Story in terms of those things? How does it stack up there in terms of what this improvement does to taxes or the bond situation? So how would Roland Story compare with other schools in that area?
Yep, and so when we went to the public and proposed a bond of $9 million for these projects, we obviously had to share with them their current tax rates and how this $9 million would impact them. And the other thing that we shared with them is that prior to that time, the school district had reduced the tax rate on our local patrons for 5 consecutive years, and that by adding this $9 million bond, which we would pay back over 16 years, we wouldn't increase our taxes above what it was 5 years ago. And so that was a good development. We have, at that time, we had no debt. The school district had been very financially conservative, and so it put us in a good position to make those decisions, and I think it made it a pretty easy decision for our voters, knowing what was included in the project and knowing that their taxes wouldn't be any higher than they were just 5 years previous. And so they supported us overwhelmingly in that bond vote.
Yeah, that was something that really I think you illustrated well in the articles and material I saw covered in the Herald, because for every individual, you know, they need to be fully informed. And if they're aware that the school's been careful and good about planning and not spending way beyond their expectation, they'll take a risk on a new bond issue. And, you know, that means that hey, we can do this. We want to support the schools, and we see that they've been very judicious about spending in the past. The other thing I'd just like to talk to you about briefly is budget. In terms of the legislature and money allocated on a per-student basis, how did it come out this year? Did the legislature give you the information you needed in time to make budget decisions this year?
Yeah, that's a good question. We have to set our budget about a year and a half in advance, and so it is nice when the legislature sets not only the coming year's numbers, but then the following year after that's numbers, because that helps us prepare and plan for the future and get everything in place that we need to get in place with the numbers that they're providing us. And so we would, of course, always like more money to do the things that we do. We work on a pretty tight budget and are very conservative with how we spend our dollars, but about 84% of our budget goes to the people in our buildings, the staff, the teachers, the custodians, the cooks, the associates, the secretaries. That's where our budget goes. And so there's not a lot of fluff in the budget, so to speak. And so any time that the legislature acts to give us more money and do it in a timely manner, then we can prepare for what we need to do in our classrooms.
Well, Matt, it's always a pleasure to have you on board and be a guest on our show. Matt Patton talking today about all the improvements made in the school system at Roland Story this year. And just a heads up that this Saturday there will be an open house at the new elementary school renovation. That's Saturday, August 25th, 9 to 11. And, Matt, are you going to be there wearing a tie or what?
I will be there. I'm not promising a tie. It depends on what the temperature is that day outside, because I may be inside and outside. We'll see.
Well, we both look forward to graduation day next year when neither of us will be expiring from heat prostration. Thank you, Matt Patton, Roland Story Schools.
Yep, thanks, Paul. Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you very much, Matt. You are listening to Local Talk on KHOI-FM 89.1. We are your hosts. I am Dennis Hart. And you must be Paul Wiersma.
Last time I checked, the mirror was accurate this morning.
And Paul, as you know, Madison County's annual Covered Bridge Festival is going to take place October 13th and 14th. There are going to be a lot of activities, including bus tours of the historic covered bridges that we were immortalized by the book and the 1995 movie, everybody knows about it here, The Bridges of Madison County, starring Clint Eastwood and Meryl Streep. Well, as it turns out, an Iowa State University sociology professor was involved in that movie. At least his pickup truck was. I talked with that professor, Paul Lasley, about that. Paul, how did your truck get into the movie The Bridges of Madison County?
Well, Warner Brothers sent out a request to various car clubs here in central Iowa asking for vintage cars of the So the movie was set in the 1960s, so they wanted older cars. And they put out a call and asked people that had vintage vehicles to bring them to Valley West Mall on a Sunday afternoon where they would do a selection. At the time, I owned two trucks, a 52 Chevy pickup that had been restored. In fact, its name was Flash. And then I had the truck that I drove to campus every day was a 54 Chevy pickup in its work clothes. It was unrestored. It was in its original condition. His name was Leo. So I sent pictures. I said, my trucks have never been this far away from home. I'm not even sure they would make it that far. But if you're interested in my trucks, here are their pictures. They're both anxious to appear in the movie, but we're not going to go to Valley West Mall. So several weeks passed, and I didn't hear from Warner Brothers Transportation. So I just figured that, you know, they'd found enough vehicles. And so I just sort of wrote it off as a missed opportunity. But, you know, a week or two before the filming was to start, they called me and said, do you still have the trucks? I, of course. They're part of family. And they said, well, we'd like to have the 54, the unrestored truck. That started my experience on the silver screen.
So how did your truck actually get down to Madison County?
Well, I drove it down. I took a friend of mine as a support vehicle, and I drove Leo down, took the country roads because I wasn't sure that being on interstate was a smart thing. So we drove through the country to down to Winterset, and and they gave us directions of where we were supposed to be at 7 o'clock. So we left here at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they gave us directions, and they said the staff will be there to intercept you. And they said you can spend the whole day on the set. And as a sociologist, that was a perfect setting for me to explore how movies are made and maybe an opportunity to meet Meryl Streep and Clint Eastwood. So I got to spend a day on the set watching them film and that sort of thing.
So talk about what you saw when you were on the set that day.
The first surprise was at 7 o'clock, the staff showed up, and they had us take our vehicles back to the actual on-site location where the home and outbuildings were. And they said, now, there's a food tent over there, so go get breakfast. So I was expecting, you know, maybe cinnamon rolls and coffee. But instead, they have a full-line buffet. They have a chef there with anything imaginable for breakfast, fixed there on spot, whether it was omelets or bacon and eggs or biscuits and gravy, whatever one wanted for breakfast, they had it. So we had a big breakfast. I had turned the keys over to the truck, and they said, now, we'd like to keep the truck for the duration of the shoot, which turned out to be about 3 weeks there in Madison County. And they stored the trucks at the Madison County Fairgrounds. But I used that opportunity. Obviously, I wanted to meet the stars. The only thing only restriction they placed was no pictures and do not ask for an autograph from Meryl or Clint. You can visit with them. They may offer to sign something for you, but it's a sort of a faux pas to ask a star for their autograph. So I spent the entire day wandering around the set, visiting with the support staff. And I learned so much from the support staff. So, for example, the actual house that's in the movie had not been lived in for 30 years. The staff told me they spent about $500,000 fixing this house for the scenes that's in the movie, that they had to get the rodents out, particularly raccoons, and they had to put down flooring. And of course, what I found interesting is as they restored this house, they had to make it look old. So, for example, you put new boards down on the floor, it's going to look like new boards. But they actually stained them and used equipment to age them, grinders and hammers, and made them look like they were worn. New hinges on the doors and gates, they actually treated them with acid to eat the covering off of them and rust them so that they would look old. But they were all, it was all new stuff. So one of the things that as I wandered around, I learned that each of the stars have doubles, and actually they set up scenes with their doubles. Now, Meryl Streep had her motor coach there and her children and a nanny, and she would come out of her coach when they got ready for a shoot, but then she would oftentimes go back to her coach, her motor home. Clint Eastwood had his coach there, but as many people will recall, Clint Eastwood actually had rented a home in West Des Moines on the golf course. But he had his own, so they had their own sort of private areas where they could. So their doubles actually end up doing a lot of the work, and it's when they set up the scene, then do they bring the stars out. This movie is set in August, so it's hot, and it was hot that day, the day I got to be there. People have asked me about the role my truck played. Well, it really was to establish the setting. It was a background vehicle. The actual truck that Bob Kincaid, the photographer, used was actually two trucks, late 50s trucks, that actually both belonged to Clint Eastwood. But those trucks were set up so they were identical, and they would change off cameras. I was surprised, for example, in one of the scenes where Bob Kincaid and Francesca are in the truck, the truck really isn't powered by itself. It's being towed the whole time. I don't even know that it has an engine in it, but they tow it. So they take the windshield out of it so that when you get a front view, the tow vehicle actually has the camera as well as the staff and the recorders and all that. The tow truck is a pretty large vehicle, as well as in some cases they would have a cameraman mounted on the side of the truck to do sort of looking through the door of the truck, recording the conversation between Francesca and Bob. So they're very specialized. The other thing that I found interesting is I watched them film the scene on the gravel road, is that they had watered the road. They had sprinkled water on it so there's no dust. And you can imagine if you're doing a recording with very sophisticated cameras, you don't want dust. But in August on a gravel road, you expect dust. So how did they do that? So they had watered the road down so that there's no actual dust from the road gravel. But in the back of the truck, under a tarp, was a little boy, a teenager, with an aerosol dust-making machine under a tarp. And as they towed the truck to create the illusion of dust, he would be spraying this aerosol can into the air, creating a dust cloud.
The magic of movie making.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you saw Eastwood and Streep, certainly two of the biggest stars in Hollywood's history, on that set. What were they like?
I think that was the thing that was most surprising to me. Of course, I've never met a movie star, and I really didn't know what. But they were just down to earth and very calm, very polite. Now, I didn't get to have long personal conversations. I chatted with them, but they're really, especially in the case of Clint Eastwood, who is a producer. In talking with some of the staff, they said one of the problems in working with Clint Eastwood is that he is so regimented and things go so smooth, we don't get any overtime. Unlike other movie stars where they're never happy with a scene and they're always changing, the staff gets a lot of overtime. And the staff will tell me, when you work with Clint Eastwood, things go like clockwork, and they're both just really wonderful people, which is a bit contrary to some of the stereotypes we have of Hollywood people being arrogant and elitist. And I could watch the interaction with the staff. They were always polite and courteous.
So what do you say to Clint Eastwood or Meryl Streep when you go up and talk to them? You have a few minutes of your life to talk to these guys. What do you say?
I say, have you ever been to Iowa before? You know, and neither one had. And I said, I asked them, I know that we can't talk about the movie, but what do you like about Iowa? And they really talked about everybody here is so friendly. And that sort of plays into the context of movie. As you recall, Francesca is home alone because her husband and two children have gone off to the Illinois State Fair. And Bob Kincaid is a wandering photographer taking pictures of local scenery and quite frankly, the beauty of Madison County.
So what do you think the appeal of that movie was to women and maybe to men? I mean, this was a woman's movie. I remember my wife took me to it. She almost had to drag me to it. I had read the book, The Bridges of Madison County, which we have in front of us right now as we record this. But what do you think the appeal was to women?
Well, you know, I think it speaks to the loneliness and social isolation of a lot of women. They had married young. She was sort of trapped in a dull, non-romantic relationship. I think it spoke to women that they could imagine having sort of falling in love or having a relationship with a handsome, adventurous, romantic person. Throughout the movie, in the sort of the courtship, he's doing things that she had long forgotten. They danced in the kitchen floor to a radio. He brought her flowers. You know, and so it was, I think it spoke to the romanticism that maybe she felt that she had lost.
What about men, though? Don't you think that scenario is every man's worst nightmare, that Clint Eastwood drives into town and seduces your wife? Isn't that a kind of a bad thing for men?
Yeah, that says, at least to me, if you're going to go off to the state fair, take your wife.
Did you have a chance when you were down there, when they were filming in Madison County, to talk to any of the people in the county about how they felt about this movie being filmed down there?
Well, you know, it generated a lot of excitement.
Sure.
Because they transformed Main Street and they recreated a filling station scene. I think the attention it brought to Madison County, the fact that you know, the bridges, the covered bridges in Madison County is a treasure to the state. And the movie only highlights the importance of the bridges and the scenery. So it really was a boon to tourism and calling attention to the quality of life that Madison County provides. Everybody that I talked to really thought this was a good thing. There probably were others that maybe the inconvenience of, you know, traffic being blocked or certain streets closed during the, but my assessment was is that people were really excited about, we're going to be featured by Warner Brothers in a national movie. The book was very popular.
Well, now the question you have to answer, we've talked about a lot of things, and what everybody wants to know, what happened to Leo, the truck that was your truck that was in the movie? Where's Leo now?
Well, you know, I couldn't sell something that I had to truck for 20 years or so, but it really was getting to the point where it might not be roadworthy and safe. So my nephew in Columbia, Missouri, his dad came up. He wanted to restore it. So the last time I seen Leo, he was sort of disassembled in the garage in various pieces as they tried to find parts and pieces to put him back together. It was sort of sad to give him away, but on the other hand, it got to the point where it was more work for me to take care of, and I don't have the skills.
That's Paul Lasley of Iowa State talking about Leo the truck that appeared in the bridges of Madison County. And you know, Paul, one of the iconic Madison County bridges, the Cedar Bridge, was torched by arsonists back in April of 2017, last year. Three people pleaded guilty to arson. They received probation suspended sentences. It was the second time the Cedar Bridge had been torched. First time was in 2002. Now, the cost to rebuild the bridge this time, $700,000. Madison County's Covered Bridge Preservation Association welcomes donations to help rebuild it. They're going to rebuild that bridge.
Well, that's fantastic. And you know, when it comes to arson and crimes like that, people only destroy things other people love. Isn't
that
interesting?
You know, that's right.
It just must be a real psychological trigger there somehow. But just alluding to the times when they were filming, of course, I lived in Clive at that time, and they interviewed Clint Eastwood, and he said, I love Iowa. No one bothers me. I walk through Hy-V, and no one comes up to me. No one invades my space. And right after that, I was in Valley Junction. I walked into this little coffee store, and there's Meryl Streep reading a book. And I thought, I heard what Clint said. I wouldn't touch her with a 10-foot pole. I will not even interrupt this woman because I want to be the Iowan who leaves her alone.
And you were.
Yes, I was a model Iowan, and because of that, Meryl Streep won't remember me. So,
oh, she probably has you high on her fan list, Facebook and all
that.
Yeah,
just for walking past.
There you go.
Well, now we have a great segment because we have Maggie Westfold talking about something dear to my heart. You know, I'm a storyteller, and we have a storytelling festival in September every year at Story City. And Maggie is going to be talking on Points to Ponder this morning about storytelling. Maggie.
Thank you. This is Maggie Westfold, KHOI Community Radio. And thank you, Dennis and Paul. It's great to be back. I thoroughly enjoy listening to you two seasoned radio guys as you co-host in your special style. You two feed off one another in a very entertaining way.
In fact, sometimes he even gives me donuts.
Oh, that's what's behind that. I'll be sharing with you today another Points to Ponder topic. But before I get to it, I have to give this nod to Saquon Gatlin, who interned at KHOI this year and came up with the Points to Ponder idea for sharing. Saquon, if you're listening, I hope you enjoy my thoughts today on the topic of storytelling. Rather than just random thoughts about storytelling, I thought I should check out the internet, so I Googled that topic. My goodness, I was a little undone by the volumes of information I came up with. So, back I stepped to my original thoughts, my reason for wanting to talk about storytelling. I love hearing a good storyteller tell a tale. I will even admit to storyteller envy. It's an art, and not everyone does it so well, me included. My dad was a great storyteller. I think one of the reasons I enjoyed his memories shared in story is that he was not day-to-day that much of a talker. Dad was likely to listen to those around him and just enjoy family and friends. But then something would tickle his memory, and his blue Irish eyes would perk up, and he'd remove from the right side of his mouth that perpetual pipe filled with George Washington pipe tobacco. Then he'd utter just the slightest little half-laugh as he smiled. That was the signal. We knew. He was already thoroughly enjoying the story he was about to tell us. Would I ever love to hear just one of those, just one more time, M.J. Foley? Our two kids, while growing up, could tell their dad and I some pretty good ones. It was our parental task to decide each time out whether we were getting the straight of it or if their tales may have been tweaked just a smidgen in self-serving ways. And I'm here to tell you that those were some creative tales, folks. And then there's the fascinating way that story can help us learn, when we're not even aware that we are indeed growing a little wiser. We think we're just listening to someone share their thoughts, that they seem to have a storytelling style. But I am aware that I've personally learned a lot in my life as I listen and then realize that I find myself thinking again and again about someone's words, certain parts of their story, what meaning I am gleaning from it, facets of my own life it seems to relate to. Possible answers to some of my own quandaries gradually become more clear as I absorb a lesson woven into a story. Whether that particular storyteller was or was not intentionally teaching me, the story they shared has just influenced me, and that, my listeners, is to my mind one of the most fascinating angles to this storytelling thing. We can actually learn a thing or two when we think we're just enjoying a good story. Storytelling predates handwriting. The earliest forms were delivered by the spoken word combined with gestures and expressions. It was part of religious rituals, and archaeologists believe that rock art and hieroglyphics served as a form of storytelling for many ancient cultures. Rock art has been revived. Have you maybe found one of those artistically painted little stones left laying randomly around town? I have, and it's on my ever-growing list of fun stuff to do, to create a few myself. Many of us who recently came to KHOI's 6th birthday party were fortunate to hear storytelling in the form of bardic poetry by Joe Plum. I have not had the honor of sitting down with Joe one-to-one, but I recently talked with a good friend about Joe. She visits with him now and then and has experienced his gift. His stories and poetry are inspired by his life pathway, his simplistic way of life, our natural environment, and his community of family and friends. Bards have long told stories of creation, and they develop a literal library of their life story, which resides in their mind, waiting to be shared orally when triggered by the words of those around them. StoryCorps is another example of effective and interesting storytelling today. It was started by a guy and his nephew in Grand Central Station in New York City in 2003, recording the stories of everyday people who randomly stopped by and spoke in their mic. Nonprofit status ensued, and these interview sessions went mobile in 2005, moving around the country, collecting stories which eventually started airing on NPR each week. Recognition from numerous awards of note and monetary grants have been received by StoryCorps for their public service, their radio and TV programming, their many publications of themed story collections, and their work at all levels with educators in building bridges between young and old, rich and poor, Christian and non-believer. Before I leave you to ponder all this talk about story, the poet in me cannot pass on yet another chance to share a little poem I wrote about 5 years ago, inspired by, a story I heard, told by one young temp to another, both college kids, during some fun years working with them in an ag research lab. This slice of life about fishing with Dad warmed my heart and became a poem dedicated to a guy named Rob. Even youngsters can't go home again. I wish I could catch my first fish again, laments the college senior, a carrot-top temp working alongside me in the lab where my muse picks up poems for free, plus a part-timer paycheck. And on he goes to say how he'd love to feel the joy again, squeal that squeal just one more time as his itty-bitty sunfish dances on the end of his line, flipping its teeny-tiny tail fin for all it's worth, begging, pleading in Pisces sign language, please let me go, let me go. It was just never quite the same thrill again, he remembers. Fun, oh yeah. But just never quite rocked like that first catch. And last but not least, listeners, we have KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM offering our own interesting stories each and every day about the lives and happenings of folks we know in Ames and Story City, in Story County and surrounding counties. Storytelling is what we are all about. It's fun, it's interesting, it's a gift to me and the other volunteers here at the station who get to do it regularly. Thank you for listening today. Now, go tell someone a fun story, one with or without an underlying message. You'll have the joy of sharing, and your listener may just learn a thing or two.
Maggie, I think you're our resident storyteller now.
You think so? Thank you.
Well, I can't let this pass without promoting the upcoming Roland's the Story City Storytelling Festival.
Great.
It's always the third weekend in September, and our storytellers come not only to perform, but also to perform at the schools. And this began, there's a man named Mike Cotter, who is a storyteller, professional storyteller. And a confession made, I've been paid for storytelling, too. In fact, one year at the State Fair, I won the storytelling contest.
Wow.
And all unbeknownst to me, I never told stories before. I was a rookie. Anyway, Mike Cotter was a storyteller in southern Minnesota who had a radio show. But he would also come down and do storytelling on WHO. Well, he drove by the Story City exit time and time again. Finally, he says, this is where there should be a storytelling festival. And so he went to the Chamber of Commerce and laid the idea out. Nothing happened. But over time, he kept stopping by on his way to Des Moines. And that was several years ago. We probably had 10 or 11 years now of annual storytelling festivals, thanks to Mike Cotter.
Excellent.
Who passed away just a couple of years ago. He's a good friend of mine. He's written several books. His stories talk about rural life and growing up in farms in Minnesota. And we've had storytellers from all over the world and people from different cultures. And I remember going up and watching them perform. It was Roland Story High School. All the kids come in. They're kind of surly. Oh, it's another assembly. And this guy, who wore a blue serge suit and a red bow tie, he was from Appalachia. And in no time, he had these surly teenage boys rolling in the aisle. Because storytelling is its own genre, yeah. And it's not a performance. It's something beyond that. So Storytelling Festival will be the third weekend, 18th or 19th of September. We'll be talking about it further on KHOI.
Excellent.
But, hey, storytelling is big and storytelling is basic. Storytelling is the basis of all stories and literature passed down through the ages. The Old Testament in the Bible is written stories that were finally written down that were told for ages in the Israeli culture.
And, Paul, we have one more story to tell before we sign off today. You mentioned the Iowa State Fair. The Des Moines Register has now published the final vote results of the favorite food contest at Iowa State Fair. We had early results on Monday. These are the final results. The favorite foods. The Iowa State Fair this year, number one, pork chops on a stick.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, and this is an upset, corn dogs, because that was leading until the very end.
Oh.
Then cookies in a cup, turkey legs, and fried Twinkies. What do you folks think about that lineup, pork chops on a stick? Would you agree with that as the top three?
I think pork chop on a stick is a champion.
Probably, I love corn dogs, too, but if, pork. I love pork. But I'm not a fan of what's happened in Iowa with pork, but I love pork.
On a stick.
How's that for a... Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I'm working on an idea for next year's state fair. It's called soup on a stick.
Frozen good luck
soup
with that one.
On a stick.
I just solved the chemical problem.
It just melts in your mouth, not in your hand.
Well, that was cheap, Dennis.
Thank you very much.
Hey, you've been listening to Local Talk this today, and our engineer today was the fabulous Aladdin, man.
Great job.
And we've been your hosts, Denny Hart and Paul Wilson, along with Maggie Westfold with her points to ponder.
I haven't been called Denny for a long time. You make me feel young again.
Well, I'm trying to be informal.
So young. Thank you for listening. Local Talk airs today at 7 a.m., noon, 7 p.m. here on KHOI 89.1 FM. Also, Remember, as if you could ever forget, that you can also hear a recording of this show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Also, remember, please, that KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
And our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team.
This was a radio production workshop today, for heaven's sakes. Stay tuned now for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m., Morning Masterpieces at 9. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio. I hope so.